preaching at times, well, let me put it this way. There are some lessons you love to preach, and there are some you don't. And a lot of times, particularly as preachers, when we preach topical sermons where we just pick a topic and then look for verses in the Bible that fit with that topic, kind of like we had this morning, sometimes as preachers we kind of skip over some topics because we don't want to preach on those. But the thing about going through a book chapter by chapter, verse by verse, and that's often called an expository sermon. But when we go through it like that, like we have been with Matthew and like we did with Genesis, it does two things. It gives us opportunities to touch on some things that otherwise we might have had difficulty working in. But it also forces us to deal with some things that maybe aren't the easiest subjects in the world. The Sermon on the Mount has been called the Mount Everest of Christian teaching. It is some of the loftiest, some of the highest expectations given anywhere in Scripture. And the section in chapter 5, beginning in verse 38, that we're going to look at tonight, is one of the sections of Scripture throughout all of the New Testament that I consider to be one of, if not the, most difficult. Now, it's not difficult to understand. It's quite plain and simple to understand. But it's one of the hardest teachings that Jesus gives. It goes, and we talked about this back at the beginning when we were looking at the Beatitudes and all the statements Jesus made about blessed are those, and those were things that were contrary to the natural way humans view things a lot of times. And what we're looking at tonight certainly falls in that category. In verse 38, and we'll make it down through verse 42 tonight, you have heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that you resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law, and take away your coat, let him have your cloak also. And whosoever shall compel you to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asks you, and from him that would borrow of you, do not turn him away. Now, as we look through this, I want us to realize that the society that Jesus lived in was not that different from our society. Oh, I know, they didn't have cars and computers and televisions and all those things. But the people, the Jewish people that he was teaching here, that he was dealing with, were not that much different from us. They were people who had a long, rich history of having an independent spirit. They were strong people. And sometimes a little stubborn, too. They were warrior people. At least their history was that. Perhaps some of the ones standing there today hadn't fought any battles, but they were of a group of people who had conquered a land, who had cast out enemies and destroyed entire nations in war. In fact, there was a time when Israel was a power to be reckoned with in the world. And others looked to them. It was a short time, but it was a time. Just as our country today is looked to by others at times. I want us to think about the things that Jesus says here. First of all, let's look at what he says they'd heard. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. We've heard that before. Sometimes people call that the law of the jungle. That's not the law of the jungle. That's actually a very civilized law compared to the law of the jungle. Now, we might think today in our society, oh, that's, how could you live like that? The law of the jungle actually would be more like this. if you gouge out my eye, I'll kill you. That's the law of the jungle, isn't it? Not just equal retaliation, but I'll go above and beyond what you did to me. If you kill my child, I'll wipe out your entire race. That's the law of the jungle. That's the law that many of the nations before Israel came on the scene had lived by. Many people lived by those kinds of thoughts, and there was terrible fighting amongst them because of that. You know, there are groups of people on the earth today that still live by that kind of a law. Yeah, we know some of them. We've been reading about it and seeing about it on the news this past week, where because somebody said something negative about somebody they honor, they start killing people. They live by the law of the jungle. But the law, and this was a law in the law of Moses, like others though, it had been perverted from its original intent. Three times in the old law, this phrase, eye for an eye, is used. Once in Exodus chapter 21, verses 22 through 25, it says this, "If men strive and hurt a woman with child," that means a pregnant woman, not a woman who's got a child with her, "and so that her fruit departs from her, and yet no mischief follow, then he shall surely be punished according as the woman's husband will lay upon him. And he shall pay as the judge is determined." So he says, if two men are fighting, and one of them hits this woman that's nearby and causes her to go into early labor, but the baby's okay, and she's okay, nothing other than, she gave birth early, but everybody's okay, then he's going to have to go before the judge and pay whatever the judge says. But then he says, if mischief follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. So these two men are fighting, and they hurt that woman or her unborn child. In other words, maybe they cause her to go into labor and she gives birth to a stillborn child. The baby dies. That man dies. If maybe they burn her and she's injured, then he gets burnt. If the baby, there's some problem with the baby as a result of it, then whatever problem the baby has, that man suffers it. If they knock her tooth out, then one of them gets their tooth knocked out. If they jab her eye out, then the one that did gets his eye jabbed out. But it was a case where that was what the judges determined. That this was a case where there was criminal activity that was put forward in a court of law. And in Leviticus chapter 24 and verses 19 through 20, a similar thing. If a man cause a blemish in his neighbor, as he has done, so shall it be done to him. Breach for breach, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. As he has caused a blemish in a man, so shall it be done to him again. And he that kills a beast shall restore it, and he that kills a man shall be put to death. You shall have one law for the stranger and for your own countrymen, for I am the Lord your God. God said, this is the law. That's what it is. You jab somebody's eye out, then you go, they take you before the judge, and the judge says, we have five witnesses, saw you jab that guy's eye out, so we're going to jab your eye out. That was the law. And then Deuteronomy 19, 16 through 21. If a false witness rises up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges, which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition, and behold, if the witness be a false witness and has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. So shall you put the evil away from among you. And those which remain shall hear and fear, and shall henceforth commit no more any such evil among you. Your eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. That verse tells us that according to the law of Moses, all of those false witnesses who testified against Jesus in his trial should have been put to death. Because that's what they were trying to have done to him. They were trying to have him put to death. And as false witnesses, they should have gotten what they were trying to get for that person they testified against. And that was the law. You went into before the judge and you testified falsely. So you hated your neighbor, and so you wanted him to have some problem of some kind or another. Whatever you were trying to get him to have a problem with, you were supposed to get it in return. You think that would stop false accusation? If it was carried out, that'd do away with it pretty quickly, wouldn't it? If somebody hollered, "Oh, so-and-so did such and such, they ought to be put in jail for 20 years," and they find out, "Oh, that was false accusation, we're going to put you in jail for 20 years. That'd kind of stop that pretty quick. "Oh, so-and-so did that, they ought to be put to death." "Oh, well, you lied about that, it was false. We can put you to death instead." That'd stop that, wouldn't it? That's what God said it would do. He said, "Those that hear and fear shall commit no more such evil among you." They're not going to do that again. So these are the three cases. All three of these cases, he's not talking about a vengeful, "I'm going to get even with you." He's talking about this was under the court of law. This was what the judges determined. This was what was supposed to be the sentence for someone who was convicted of the crime. But they had taken it to the point where anyone who did anything to them, they didn't go to the court about it. They'd just go get even with them themselves. They were in the business of vengeance and revenge. Well, the Lord said, "Vengeance is mine. I will repay." It's not our place to take that vengeance. Now, there was one example from the Old Testament where the idea of what's called the avenger of blood, which dealt with when there was a murder. If someone murdered another individual, then that person's family had someone in that family who was appointed to be the avenger for that family. And that person would go and hunt down the murderer and kill them. And of course, they also had the cities of refuge where if someone accidentally killed somebody, they could run. They could run to that city and hide out in that city if it was an accident, if they didn't murder somebody. But even when they went to that city, then there was going to be a trial. And if it was found out that it actually was a murder, then they were going to be delivered to that avenger of blood to be killed. If they found out that it was not a murder, that it was an accident, then that person was allowed to live, but they had to stay in that city for the rest of the time that the high priest was alive. If they left that city, then the avenger of blood could get them. But that's not what Jesus is talking about here. Jesus is talking about the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, the getting even idea. And while that was part of the Old Testament, they had taken that and abused it. And so now, what does he say? "But I say unto you." Oh, when he says, "But I say unto you," here in the Sermon on the Mount, anytime he says that, we need to be ready for him to say something that's going to be shocking to our way of thinking. It has been so far. I mean, he said, "You've heard, don't commit adultery, but I tell you, if you look at a woman to lust after, you've already committed adultery in your heart." He said, you know, that if you... you've heard, you know, put away your wife. But I say to you, if you do that, you've committed adultery and you cause her to commit adultery. He says, if you've heard, you know, don't perjure yourself, don't forswear yourself. But I say to you, don't swear at all. And now he comes to this and he's telling us now, instead of this eye for an eye attitude. And I saw recently a news story, Even in the area of justice, well, we shouldn't be against justice. Someone who's wicked and has done evil deserves the punishment they get. But there was a story about this woman who, I don't know what crime had been committed against some family member, but the person who had committed that crime was on death row and was scheduled to be executed, and she was trying to raise money so she could go watch it. So she could be there to see it happen. And I think that's the kind of attitude that Jesus is talking about here. You know, watching that person get what's coming to them isn't going to bring somebody back. It's not going to make up for the pain and suffering that somebody has experienced. Here's what Jesus says. We read it already. Did you hear it when we read it? This is tough. This is probably one of the most ignored commands by those who claim to be Christians of all. Probably right up there with baptism. Baptism might be more ignored than this one, but certainly this one is pretty close. He says, don't resist. Don't fight back. Don't resist. Turn the other cheek. Now when he says do not resist evil, he doesn't mean that we shouldn't be against evil things and that we shouldn't try to do what's right and try to overcome evil with good, as Paul teaches us. But he tells us that if somebody strikes you on the right cheek, turn the left also. That's kind of hard for us to wrap our minds around. We're not that kind of people in this country. If somebody strikes us on the cheek, we're going to strike them back. And they better have knocked us out with the first blow, because if not, we're going to get them. That's the way we live. That's the way our society lives. It's the way our nation as a whole behaves. You know, we think, surely Jesus didn't really mean not to fight back, did he? I mean, we teach children pretty early on, don't you start the fight. Don't be mean. Don't be the aggressor. Don't start trouble. But you defend yourself if it comes down to it. We tell them that, don't we? Yeah. That's exactly what we tell them most of the time. But what did Jesus say? He didn't stutter. He didn't put it in some hard-to-understand language. He just said, do not resist, and if you're struck on the right cheek, turn the other cheek. Now some people, I don't know, some people may think, well, surely there must be some error in the translation from Greek to English. That can't be what Jesus meant. Did Jesus really mean this? Other people try to be cute about it. Well, he said if they strike you on the right cheek, but if they strike you somewhere else, you can just go ahead and beat them up. Now, Jesus just gives one illustration to illustrate the point. And then others will say, well, you know, they strike me on the right cheek, you know, but then, and I turn the other, and they strike me on that one, then I've done what he said do, and after that, I can have at them then. But don't forget, it's not just if you're struck on the right cheek, turn the left. Notice how he started it. Do not resist. Non-resistance. Non-violence. That's a concept that is foreign to many of us. It's a concept that Mahatma Gandhi, I know I can't say his name right, but it's a concept that over in India, Gandhi used. And he actually convinced the people that were listening to him and following him to do what Jesus said to do, non-violent. And, oh, it changed that whole country around when he did that. He got the idea from Jesus. He didn't come up with it on his own. Now, would that sometimes mean that people might suffer? Yeah. Did Jesus live this out in His life? Did He turn the other cheek? Yeah, He did. What about Stephen? When they were dragging Stephen out of the city to stone him, how do you imagine he went? You suppose he was kicking and fighting and scratching and clawing and trying to throw elbows and punch and get away so he could get away from those people? I don't picture him going that way. Not at all. In fact, I imagine they wouldn't have had to have drugged him out there. He would have walked to where they were going to stone him. When they got him out there, he didn't run. He didn't try to hide. He didn't try to throw the rocks back at him. We talked about that a couple weeks ago in class. You know, we don't follow this, do we? Not very well. We don't really have this attitude of non-retaliation down in our spirits. But still we think, well, surely Jesus couldn't mean that we should just let somebody beat us up. Surely He didn't mean that. I don't know how else to interpret "do not resist." Maybe you do. Let me know. I don't know how else to take that without twisting it from what it says. Now, this doesn't mean that we never take advantage of the protections that we have under the law. We see Paul doing this in some approved examples. In one case, he avoided taking a beating. In Acts chapter 22 and verse 25, he just asked them the question, is it lawful for you to beat a Roman citizen without having condemned him in a trial? And that stopped it in its tracks. On another occasion, where he had already been beaten without a trial, and then they were going to try to sweep it under the rug, he said, oh no, we're Roman citizens, and you beat us without having a trial? You come down here, and you let us out publicly. You let it be known and let it be shown that we were innocent, in essence. And they did. So Jesus is not saying that we don't appeal to the law of the land for protection. Romans 13, Paul tells us that those that are in authority are there to punish the evildoer and to protect the good. They don't always do that, but that's what they're supposed to be doing. So there are some other things taught in Scripture that may help us clarify what Jesus meant to some degree, but still it doesn't take all the edge off of what Jesus really said here. And just in case we thought, well, that was just a mistake, that was a mistranslation, something was wrong there, Jesus goes on in the next verse, in verse 40. He says, if someone suing you wants to take your coat away from you, go ahead and give them your clothes too. I remember seeing a movie one time. I can't remember which movie that was, but this boy had been off to the big city and he got into some trouble and he came back to the little town and he had become kind of a ruffian up there. And so he went into this little country store in the little small town there and he was going to rob the place. And so he started to go about his business to rob the place, and the store owner opened up the cash register and just started giving him the money out of it. He said, "You know, it looks like he was just stealing the stuff. You know, he wasn't actually robbing the money. He was just taking, you know, Cokes and chips and different things off the shelves and whatever." And the man opened it up. He said, "You know, here, you know what? You take this." And he was just dumbfounded. He didn't know how to handle that. Here he's trying to rob the place, and the guy's giving him stuff. You know, it does make it kind of hard for somebody to rob you if you give it to them. But that's what Jesus says. You know, if somebody's taking you to court, they're going to sue you. Well, just go ahead and give it to them. Save the trouble. And if we dig down deep, we start to understand what Jesus is saying. People are more important than things. Relationships are more important than stuff. And if we start to realize that, first and foremost, of course, going back to verse 39, our relationship with God is first. And we shouldn't do anything to anybody that's going to affect our relationship with God. And being violent is one thing that affects our relationship with God. And so we shouldn't do anything as well that's going to damage our ability to influence others for Christ. Well, that's not usually the way we think about it, is it? But in case we miss those two, Jesus gives us another one. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, you go 2. This is where the idea of second mile Christianity came from. It's not second mile Christianity. Jesus is saying this is what being one of my followers is. Either you are or you aren't. There's no 1 mile Christian. Every Christian is a second mile Christian. Or they're not really a Christian. So this is what Jesus says. If someone compels you to go 1 mile, you go 2. Now the word mile there is actually literally, it's from a Latin word. The Roman government had this policy, and so it was a Latin word. It wasn't a Greek word originally. And it was milion, and it actually meant 1,000 paces. So it's not quite our mile. I mean, our mile is more than 1,000 paces. But this was the word that's translated here as mile in the English. But the law at that time said that the Roman soldier who had his pack, as a soldier would, could make any of the people under their command, underneath the Roman government's authority, all of those nations that they had conquered, including those Jews in Judea, where Jesus was teaching this, they could give them their pack and say, carry my pack a mile for me. And the people had to do it. If they refused to do it, they could be arrested right there on the spot. They could probably be beaten and likely killed, and nobody could say anything about it because they refused the order of the Roman government. They were disobedient. And so, they had to do it. And as we think about Jesus teaching these things, realize, and it's hard for us. As Americans, we have never, none of us in here, even those who may have lived through World War II times, have never considered the actual possibility, really, and certainly never experienced a situation in this country where we were occupied by a foreign, hostile government with soldiers. Can you imagine that? It's hard for us to fathom it. We've been free so long in this country. We don't understand. We don't know what that would be like, really. It's hard to imagine. Now, some of us may get to experience it, and it may be our own government that has the soldiers that are hostile to us at some point. But right now, we've never experienced anything like this. But the people in Jesus' day had, and most of those people sitting there could not stand the Roman government, and they couldn't stand this particular law that the Roman government had forced on them. They hated it. Some of them hated it so much, one of Jesus' disciples is known as Simon the Zealot. You heard of him? Do you know what a zealot was? A zealot, it wasn't like a Democrat or a Republican. A zealot was a terrorist. It was a terrorist organization whose sole purpose was to try to assassinate as many Romans as they could and get away with it. That's what they wanted to do. And this Simon became one of Jesus' followers. And he's here in this crowd. And no telling how many others with a similar mindset. Maybe some that wouldn't have actively gotten involved in that group and actually thrust a knife into a soldier's back or into a governor's back or some other Roman official's back, maybe a tax collector if they could get a hold of one of them. You know, they wouldn't have actually killed somebody, but boy, they cheered for those guys. To them, those guys weren't terrorists. Those guys were patriots. They were trying to get those nasty Romans out of the country. This is the group of people Jesus is talking to. And he says to them, you know that law the Romans have where they can make you go 1 mile and carry their pack? And you know how much you hate that law? Carry it 2 for them. Many of the Jews hated this rule so much that they had actually measured out both ways on the road in front of their house and in front of their business, both directions. They had measured out how far they had to go, and they had driven a marker in there at both sides so that if the Roman came up to them and said, here, carry my pack, they knew exactly how far they had to take it, and they'd take it that last step. And can you just imagine? Because, you know, while they had to follow the law, they certainly didn't have to have a good attitude about it. Can you imagine the hatred in their eyes as they looked at that Roman soldier and took that pack and plunked it down and said, there, I carried it a mile. And then went back home. Now imagine the difference that someone who's one of Jesus' followers, who's listened and learned and is living by what Jesus says, as they cheerfully carry that pack, and when they get that mile, and the soldier says, well, you've done what you had to do, they say, oh, it's okay, I'll carry it another mile for you. Can you imagine the shock on the Roman's face to see somebody that way? And not only that, but as they walk along, for them to talk to him and ask him, well, how's your family? Are you married? Do you have children? How do you like your job? Where are you going to? And what? Can you imagine the difference that the Roman soldiers' opinion of Jesus' followers would be compared to their opinion of the Jewish people who acted the other way? Now, let's bring it forward to today. Let's think about things in our own lives. How do we behave? Are we willing to go that extra mile? I know there's not a law anywhere that says somebody can do that to us today. And so it's kind of hard for us to relate to that. But there are areas in our lives where people expect something of us. Do we do the least that we can get by with and have a bad attitude about it while we're doing it? Now, the Bible tells wives to be submissive to their husbands. So the wife says, well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what, because the Bible says do it, but I'm not going to like it. Well, that's not going to really help their marriage, is it? The Bible tells the husband to care for his wife. So I'll take care of her, but that's as far as it's going to go. I'm not going to go any further than that. She better not interrupt me while the saints are on. I don't know, this year you might want to get interrupted while the saints are on. They're not off to a very good start. But, you know, it's that kind of, what do we do? How far do we go? Well, I was down there, I went Sunday morning, I went Sunday night, and I went Wednesday night, and they better not ask me to do anything else. I've done more than my share because I came to church all 3 times. Are we willing to go above and beyond the call of duty? Are we willing to go the extra mile in any area of our life? What about on the job? Are we willing to give a little extra without making a scene about it? Jesus teaches again, it's not about the 1 mile or the 2 mile. You know, some people would have had the attitude, well, Jesus said I should go 2 miles, so I'm going to go 2 miles. And they still had the bad attitude about it. They really hadn't done what Jesus said. They were missing the point, and sometimes we miss the point. It's not about the 1 mile or the two. It's about the attitude and the pure heart while we do these things. in every area of life, whatever it is. You know, it doesn't record what happened here in this, as far as, you know, what the crowd was thinking or saying or doing. But boy, I can imagine that some of them were not too pleased with this teaching. They wanted somebody like David, who was going to rise up and be a leader to lead them up against the Romans and kick the Romans out. And that's not what Jesus was giving them here. He's telling them to be submissive and like it. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some murmuring in the crowd when this section came up. It wouldn't surprise me to find out that some just quit listening. And they may have still sat there, but they weren't listening anymore. And maybe some of them, I imagine some of them walked away. Said, this guy's crazy. He is touched in the head. I'm not going to listen to this guy anymore. I'm going to go back to one of these other teachers that knows what they're talking about. Wouldn't surprise me to find out that that was their attitude, because it certainly would be the attitude of an awful lot of people today if they actually knew what Jesus taught. It's tough. Well, to add insult to injury to our way of thinking, Jesus goes on in verse 42 to say that if somebody wants to borrow something from us, we should let them. It's kind of a blanket statement that certainly leaves a scratch in our heads. And I know there are some things that we could say, well, you know, it's a little different letting somebody borrow a donkey and letting somebody borrow the car. I mean, there are legal liabilities if they get in a wreck with that car. And that's true. I understand that. And of course, certainly, I'm afraid we sometimes argue about the semantics of these things and miss the point. What did Jesus say? It's more blessed to give than to receive. That's what he's really saying here. He said it sometime, although we don't have it recorded when he said it, but it's recorded for us later on. But that's what he's teaching here. Be a giver, not a taker, but borrow. I know Jesus said, don't cast your pearls before swine and don't give what's holy to dogs. And you know, I'm not sure exactly where it comes to somebody's just a bum that's bumming stuff all the time and they've crossed the line from just, you know, borrowing sometimes to just being a bum. And I know the Bible teaches that if a man won't work, he shouldn't eat. And some of those things as well. We're not to support those that are false teachers, not even wishing them Godspeed, John says. So certainly, I would suspect we're not supposed to be giving those false teachers money. And I'm sure that those things would enter into this discussion. And I have to be honest. And any time, not just this, but any time I'm preaching on any subject from the Bible, don't assume that it means I got it all together. Don't assume it means, well, I'm doing all this, and so I'm telling you what to do. I struggle with these things just as much as you do. And I don't have all the answers for exactly how to apply all of these teachings that Jesus has in every situation of life. And sometimes even when I do have the answer and I know what I ought to do, I don't do it. And I bet you feel the same way. But I do know this. We can't just ignore this and pretend it's not in there. We can't just pretend Jesus didn't say these things, because he did. We have to consider them. We have to think about it. And we have to try, to the best of our ability, to the best of our understanding of it, to live up to it. Told you this was a tough little section, didn't I? And it doesn't say it after this Sermon on the Mount. I'm surprised, but you know, later on in John 6 and verse 66, Jesus had taught some things that I guess those people thought they were harder than this. Because after they heard them, many of them turned away and quit following Him. One of the saddest verses in the Bible, John 6:66. And Jesus turned to His disciples, the apostles, the 12. They hadn't left. They were still there. And He said to them, "Will you go away also?" Can you hear the sadness? Maybe Jesus even struggling with a little bit of depression at that point and feeling like, what have I accomplished? All this time teaching all these people and now they've left. And here I got these 12. Are you going to leave too? You going to desert me? Going to leave me all alone? And Peter, for once, answered up and said the right thing. Usually when he speaks up, he says something, he sticks his foot in his mouth. Open mouth, insert foot, that was Peter's moniker. But in this case, he said something right. Jesus asked, "Are you going to go away also?" And Peter said, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." As we think about these words that Jesus has spoken, and we realize, as John 10:10 tells us, Jesus came that we might have life and that we might have it more abundantly. I want us to think about that. Is it possible that we're not really enjoying the abundant life that Jesus promised because we're not really wholeheartedly believing what He taught? We want some caveats. We want some exceptions. We want some loopholes. We want to do most of it, but be able to say, "I don't want the spinach or the broccoli because I don't like them. And so I'll leave those out." But Jesus' teachings are not a buffet where you get to go down and pick and choose which things you want. You have to take them all. Take them all or leave them all. Those are your choices. Well, it's a struggle for us. But we have to keep fighting the struggle. We have to keep trying to overcome self and give in to Jesus. Tonight, if you haven't done that, maybe there are areas in your life where you're still fighting against Him. If He tells us not to resist the evil person that's trying to hurt us, well, surely we need to quit resisting God. Quit resisting the Lord. Give up and give in to Him. And be at peace. He has the words of eternal life, but He also has the words that will bring us the abundant life here on this earth. If you need to respond to His invitation, please do so.